Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. We love interacting with all of you, so if you're watching us live, head on over to YouTube or Facebook and hop in the chat. We love seeing what you guys come up with every week, so love to see you over there. You know me. My name is John Ruark. I am a past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Let's go to our next host. That'll be Jason Richards. Hello, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Great.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I'm excited about our show tonight, and I'm excited about the show that's coming after. But I'm also past master Vacation Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Muy bien. Excellent. Thank you. Good to see you tonight. Next up, Joe Martinez. How are you tonight?
Ooh, hello. This is Joe Martinez. Let's go with which lodge today? Manassas Lodge, number 182 in Manassas, Virginia. Super excited to be here and super excited for the surprise after.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear what that is.
Indeed.
All right. And last but not least for now, the one, the only, Juan Sepulveda.
Good evening, brothers. Juan Sepulveda here from Orange Blossom Lodge, number 80 in sunny Kissimmee, Florida. And the brother behind, thegentlemansbrotherhood.com. Good evening.
Good evening. All right. So two pieces of news before we get into tonight's topic. Definitely want to thank all the patrons who've been awesome in supporting the show so we can get some cool lighting. We can keep hosting fees and all that. Just keep that show rolling. So you guys have been awesome for the past year or so. Keep being awesome. And coming over into our little private Facebook group. Love to chat with you and nerd out with you over there this week. We've been talking about the lost symbol. Right? In case you hadn't heard, that's the second piece of news tonight. After the show, if you're watching live, welcome. If not, also welcome, because 15 minutes after, give or take, we go off the air. At 10:45 Eastern, we will jump right back into a separate YouTube and Facebook stream to go over the signs, symbols, and secrets hidden in the new Peacock series, The Lost Symbol, based off of... Where's my book? Here it is. Found it. Ta-da! Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol. Masons in D.C. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read it, spoiler alert. So stay tuned for that.
Also, if you haven't watched it, spoiler alert.
True. It will be loaded with spoilers, but that's the point. We're going to jump right in and not waste any time. So that'll be great to see you all over there as well. Awesome. Let's go right into tonight's topic, which is on the topic of Know Thyself. We're going to dig deep into where that term came from, what it means, and how it applies to Freemasonry. So without further ado, I thought we'd start with someone who's actually been to the location where we've first found archaeological evidence of this phrase. So Joe, I'm going to hand it off to you to kind of lay out that historical framework and maybe show us a picture or two.
Maybe. Yes, indeed. Yes.
Goodies.
So yeah, goodies indeed. So, hi everybody. So today we're going to talk about the Delphic Maxims and where they came from. They came from this place in Greece called Delphi. And one of the most famous ones that that you've ever heard is the Maxim to Know Thyself. And we're getting into some cool symbology on those two simple words. So I guess we could start with... what the Delphic Maxims are, and then talk about where they came from. So the Delphic Maxims, many of you have heard many of these maxims. There's, I think, at last count, 147 of them. And they basically are a set of maxims or codes for living that are all inscribed at the Temple of Apollo at Delphi.
Yeah, I like to say they're like the hashtag of like knowledge or truths, right? Because they're meant to be short. Maxims are meant to be short statements, right? Of wisdom, preferably.
Yeah, absolutely. And they show up in ancient Greece, and most notably, again, they're all inscribed at the Temple of Apollo, and we'll actually see pictures of the ruins of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi from 2018. And so these maxims, again, were inscribed at the Temple of Apollo in the city of Delphi. So the city of Delphi is a mountaintop city located in Greece. And I think a good way to talk about the history is that it was there is archaeological evidence of oracles and religious things going on in Delphi, going all the way back to the Mycenaeans. So the 15th century BCE, 14th century BCE. So around that time, before the Dark Ages of Greece or the Homeric Age of Greece. And I think we talked about that in another previous episode, you know, BJ before Joe. And that's a terrible acronym. I'm never using that again. Before. And
so indeed. That's what that means.
Indeed. So, but the after the Greeks got out of their Dark Ages and started to learn how to write again and not kill each other and, you know, be a bit more civilized towards one another, there's evidence of the post-Homeric Age Greeks setting up shrines and temples in the city of Delphi. And you had evidence going back to around the 7th and 6th centuries BCE talking about these oracles that lived there and prophesied there and, you know, came out with these, again, as John put it, these small hashtags of knowledge that were attributed to the god Apollo. So places where there are oracles are places where the gods impart knowledge down to man. And in the Greek culture of the time, those were most notably given to these sages or these oracles, you know, hence where the word comes from, that are specially prepared people to receive that divine knowledge from the gods. So, yeah. So without further ado, while I'm sitting here blabbering, I'm going to get my, my screen up and show you some pictures that we took of Delphi. So spoiler alert, I went on a trip to Europe, a school trip with my daughter, who at the time was 14. And now she's 16 going on 17. And yeah, so we're going to show those once I can figure out the screen share. Here we go. And here we go. So that's Maribel. She's actually been on the YouTube and quite a bit, and she's done presentations at Esotericon. She's very cool. But this is the top of the mountain at Delphi, where the ruins. This is the beginning of the ruins, and it was a very cloudy and rainy day there. For those that have never been, you know, my TripAdvisor review is absolutely go to it. It's a very cool place.
Oh yeah.
Inside. The right at the foot of the mountaintop, before you actually make the trek up to see the oracle, there is a museum with a lot of artifacts that they recovered in Delphi, and a place better suited to keep some of this stuff, you know, as opposed to keeping it exposed to the elements and things like that. And all the temples and all the shrines, they're all blocked off with chains and things like that. So you actually can't go inside them. You could just walk around them and stuff. So you wouldn't be able to see some of the stuff that was originally in there to begin with. This is the filling on treasury, the Athens. So that is the treasury. This is the ruins right before you get to the top. This was a treasury where they kept money, gold and silver and things like that. It's actually one of the only buildings that's not completely destroyed. And this is the place where they kept all their money, and people would pay lots and lots of money to go talk to the oracle. So Delphi was a very, very rich city. And they had an oracle that spoke directly to the god Apollo. So you had a lot of, you know, you had a lot of Hollywood stars back then would come and go see the oracle, and it would cost a lot of money. This is my ugly head in front of the temple. Some of it's been restored. You can see those columns there, their replacement columns and things like that. But most of it is pretty intact.
The columns running out of your head like Athena.
Yes. Yes. This right here is, so if you've ever been to Europe, it's not like Disney World where everything is like you have assisted walking paths and things like that. You are walking up these really long, treacherous steps no matter where you go. So this is the beginning of the trek up to the mountaintop to go see the Temple of Apollo, which was at the top. And sorry, these pictures are out of order because Google does that. That's my mom. Everybody say hi to her. And that's another statue that was recovered from there. Hi, this mom. Is the trek up to the top. Most of you guys know her. This is more stuff that was found in there. Those are the sages. So this right here is the actual Temple of Apollo, or what's left standing there. It's actually a really breathtaking sight when you go and see it. We can get a little bit closer, and we will, but the actual, and you see a bunch of tourists there getting some stuff. But that's the actual temple. It was the largest structure at the top of the mountain. But as you can see, it's been beat up a little bit. This is the walkway up to the temple itself. That's the sages again. That's my mom. We just would put my mom in whatever room we found and just make her take pictures. So this is a closer shot of the actual temple itself. These are the steps leading to the temple, and that's the actual level ground of the temple itself. That's some cool Greek stuff. And that's the Museum of Delphi. That's so you would go see the temple first and go make a tribute to the oracle, which my daughter and I got to do. We had to leave our tour guide and go leave a monetary gift, and then you go see all the stuff in the museum. And that's the countryside. Like I said, it's absolutely breathtaking. It's more ruins. That's a pano shot of the oracle, the temple itself, and that's where the oracle resided and prophesied. And I guess we'll talk about this a little bit too. There is some gaseous odors and some cracks in the mountain where the Temple of Apollo actually resided. So that could have contributed to some of these prophecies themselves. And these are all, that's my mom again. Those are Greek statues for those that think they're not. Those are Greeks. Did I just zoom in there or somebody else did? That was me. Those are Greeks. So like I said, there was stuff there going back to the time of the Mycenaeans, which are your pre-Hellenic Greek cultures. And that, does anybody know what that is? That's a Sphinx. And that's my daughter. And that's the end of my slideshow.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. So we covered a little bit of the history, a little bit what's on there. And of course, Know Thyself was one of, again, many Delphic maxims. But it's certainly one of the most popular. In fact, it's like one of the top three, right? Of know thyself, nothing in excess, and surety brings ruin. So if this is such a powerful two-word phrase, then I guess the next question becomes, what does it mean? What does it actually mean when they summarize it and then translate it to know thyself? What is that actually, how's that decomposed? Juan, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I first have to share my I don't know how to say it. Like, I feel terrible that all this time I thought that second maxim was nothing is excess. So I was doing everything to the max.
It's doing like it all.
I mistranslated the stupid thing
to the extreme.
Should have known. the entirety of that know thyself, I do love the simplicity of it and how profound it is. One of the things that I like the most about masonry and about looking at different philosophies and religions is that focus on, okay, you have to dig deep in order for you to find some of the truths. And knowing thyself from our context of our experience with masonry, that introspection that we have in order to see where our excesses are, where our superfluities are, what are the vices that hold us back from reaching the perfection that we seek, it all begins from that point of knowing thyself. And one thing that I like to, whenever I'm talking about this, about introspection, I like to make the point that not everything you find there is pleasant. Not everything you find when you're getting to know yourself is something that makes you proud, but that's part of the whole deal. It's knowing yourself, like really getting to know yourself. And there's the ugly, is the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all there. Mm-hmm. But it's that point
and
of
the furry behind you.
Yes,
and the furry behind Tesla. You.
That's Tesla right there.
Hi, Tesla. Hey, who's this guy? Robert, welcome to the show.
Oh, what look at that.
What do you think know thyself means?
I think it means not what we think it means.
That's what I'm talking about. Do it. Bring it.
You're taking it more in a biblical sense? Because this is a family show.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting, like the whole concept. When I first heard the term, like I really applied it in the same way I think my mom always thought about it, which is my mom is like a Roman Catholic born, but like really was kind of a New Ager growing up. And all through her life, like she's been really into like some really rad concepts that are, you know, they're New Agey. And so that whole know thyself maxim is interesting because it's often attributed today, like in the New Age movement, in pop culture and things to it relates back to the, like Ralph Waldo Emerson, who arguably may be the first person to have widely talked about it in a way that meant know your human divineness or like the God inside of you. And then it's taken off from there. But prior to Emerson, like even in the Greek sense, and I think Joe, you probably have some great context on this just from having gone and what you study. But in the Greek sense, you know, from what we're reading, it is introspective in nature always, but the meaning is more kind of like know your place, human, almost.
If you had been on time, you would have seen I did a slideshow of my visit, but you were late.
Yeah, I know. I was there. I was there. I watched the whole thing. I saw all the pictures of your daughter.
No, you didn't.
I was there.
No,
I did. No. I was here waiting.
Correct. Whatever. You don't know yourself. But no, that's a fantastic point because we tend to right away go with that introspective divine aspect of knowing thyself. But the Delphic maxims were really rules for just living more than an invitation to bring the divine into your life, depending on which maxim it was, right? It was, you know, it was things like you see in the Ten Commandments, respect your parents, honor the gods.
Or the virtues.
Like John said, they were very succinct, little pocket-sized rules for how to be a good person, according to the gods, right? Because that's where they came from. So, but no, that's an excellent point. I think that there's many layers to knowing thyself. And, you know, on its surface level, it certainly is, hey, you know, this is your place in the universe and, you know, live and act and breathe within it and don't be a scummer, you know, pretty much.
I mean, I do have to agree with the idea of knowing yourself being inherently introspective, but there's no reason why it can't be introspective, kind of like Pardes exegesis, where it's introspection on several different planes. And while the Delphic oracles may have used the maxims for just living, and you know that could mean to know yourself, to know your vices, to know your virtues, to know your place in society, just so that you can become, you know, a better, more peaceful citizen of Greece. That to me makes a lot of sense, but you know, we don't have to stop there nowadays. And so I do think, you know, when you ask that, or when you read that maxim, you can really look at it on multiple different levels. And so knowing yourself in relationship to others, in relationship mm-hmm. to your God, mm-hmm. Knowing yourself as in there is a spark of the divine within you. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many different ways that you could interpret that introspective exercise of meditating on that maxim that, I think it could do a lot of good to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you say
something. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Juan.
that meditating on those maxims, as you said, it made me think of the exercises we do where it depends in the place you're standing. So it's your point of view. Where you, from what perspective am I observing this? From the corporal here and now point of view, yeah, the know thyself, of course, will encompass heavily that getting to know who you are, the virtues and the flaws within you, so that you can physically do whatever needs to happen in order for you to continue evolving. But as you continue progressing, just like you do with almost any discipline, I can see how you can then gain a new perspective as you continue escalating through life. Let's say you've now are spending more time in a spiritual place, and you're trying to now, from that point of view, see, okay, how do I know myself as a divine entity? I love that. I think the romantic in me thinks, oh, that's pretty cool. And you can keep on expanding, like kind of Jason alludes, okay, who am I in the context of me as a singularity? Do I know myself as the role that I play in my family? Do I know myself as the role and the impact I have within my community? And you can continue expanding that and almost looking at knowing yourself from a variety of filters. I think that'll be a very good exercise to adopt.
What you guys started to say about the idea of the, you know, your places in society and things. If you look at, for instance, if you read like texts on Atlantis, when you read about what Plato says in Critias, I think it's in Critias, it might be in Timaeus, but he talks about the dangers and such of mixing caste systems even, and what the good is and what the bad is. So there's like even inherent in this Grecian ideal is like artists are with artists and, whatever, you know, it's really segmented, and it almost feels like the know thyself also in context historically may have also had a piece in that, you know where you are, know your place. And you guys have already talked about it, but
No, but you touch on something super interesting, which is even the Greeks themselves use different definitions for a simple two-word concept, right? And you brought up Plato. When Plato was writing about Socrates, he always wrote in several volumes like Protagoras and Phaedrus and things like that, that Socrates would always use the phrase know thyself when he was talking to his students. And he used it one way to talk about that wisdom that we need to find internally. And then you have Aeschylus, who wrote Prometheus Bound, for those that haven't read it, super awesome. But that's where we get that symbology where you see Prometheus and he's chained to the side of a mountain, and you have a little monster eating his his liver every day. Mm-hmm. But in that drama, in that Greek tragedy, you have Prometheus being chained up and you have Zeus doing the chaining, but you have Oceanus, who's literally saying the words know thyself to Prometheus, but the way he's saying it is, hey, you should have known your place and not to speak ill of those that, you know, decide your fate for you. And we all know what Prometheus did, right? He stole fire or knowledge and gave it to man. Zeus was pissed and chained him to a rock to be tortured for all eternity. And Oceanus says to him, know thyself, you know your place, punk, because you done messed up. So
interesting.
Done messed up, Aaron.
So another thing that's interesting too, so this is written about 500 years BC, and other translations of it could stand as know thy measure, right? Now, what are you measuring up against, right? How are you measuring yourself against the world? It reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, in the New Testament where it says, like, yeah, don't judge lest you be judged by the same standard. And some people forget that second half. It's not don't judge others. It's just when you judge, be careful, because that same standard, that same measure should be applied to you as well. And you better measure up to that. right? Don't judge the speck in someone else's eye when you have a plank in your own. And I'm also reminded of the phrase, like, to thine own self be true, right, from Shakespeare, right? Be true to yourself. Like, don't try to, like, put on airs. Don't try to put on masks about who we are in society. Like, really know who you are first before really interacting with the world. And we've talked about all the different facets of what knowing yourself means personally, spiritually, vocationally, in the family, in society, and in the world, right? So we've covered a whole breadth of that, all based on two words, which is fascinating. And so the next question for all of you is probing a little bit deeper. Why is it important to know thyself? Okay, so we talk about what it means. Now, so what? Like, why should we care? What benefit do we have to gain by knowing thyself?
It's difficult to improve oneself, improve one's station, if you don't have a baseline of who you are.
That's a good point. Like, I like to.
You think, can't move if you don't know where you're starting from.
I like to say, if you you're trying to lose weight, for example, you have to know how much you weigh first, right? You have to know the weight before you can. No, you could just empanadas all day, every day. Got it.
And tacos.
So why else should we? Why should we care about knowing thyself? What does it do for us? What does it do for society?
I think maybe it just offers. I was just going to say it offers peace of mind, right? Like, it can, because by getting there, it's peace that you become comfortable in who you are. Like, there is a necessary kind of confidence that I think a lot of people probably lack because of just any number of things, right? So by knowing who you are, you become confident in who you are. Not to say like pushy or alpha dog confident, right? But like, you know who you are. You're comfortable in your own skin. And then you can go from there, right? I mean, when you know your own shortcomings and things. But I think having that peace in your own head, like, you're not always thinking ill of yourself or, you know, did I say the right things? Did I do the right stuff? Did I act the right way? You know, if you're confident in who you are, you don't have to fake anything. And so I think, part of it is being secure in your beliefs and in the way you live your life.
Reminds me that also, of a phrase. Go ahead, Jason.
You know, it also helps you relate to the world around you. And so knowing yourself can help you relate to other people in the world, other phenomena in the world. If I know that I am scared of heights or have a problem with heights, I'm not going to try to, you know, climb Mount Kilimanjaro. If I know that there are certain pet peeves that I find repugnant, nobody would ever find certain pet peeves repugnant, then I will not seek out like a relationship or an intimate relationship with someone who sets off all of those pet peeves or, you know, those behaviors. And so it's more, you know, it's more than just, you know, how we see ourselves in the world, but it's who we see ourselves with and what we see ourselves occupying our time and our, you know, physical space with.
Juan, you were going to say something?
Jason, that's a very healthy approach, you know, I call it curating your friendships. I talk about that in the Gentleman's Brotherhood, how important it is and how the impact it's had on me. You have to be in control of who you are around and who you give space from your brain to. But what I was going to say earlier is about getting to know yourself puts you in a position of control. You're very vulnerable when you are not fully aware of how or why you react to certain things in a certain way. And I'll give you a random example. If you, for example, let's say you grew up with people that didn't value you, enough, or didn't show appreciation for your value. And as you go through life and you encounter moments where people are not appreciating your efforts, your response may be visceral, it may be subconscious, it may be automatic and almost animalistic. And you are at the mercy of whatever those emotions elicit in you. By knowing yourself, you recognize, I know that I have this deficiency in which I attribute lack of support with whatever, or this is how it makes me feel. Because when you're aware, now you understand what your feelings mean. And this almost goes hand in hand with meditation. In mindfulness meditation, you are called to witness whatever sentiment arises in your consciousness. You're feeling a certain way. Now, feeling is one step. Understanding why you feel like that and just seeing it as a matter of fact, like, it's like, oh, this is why I feel this way. Then you're in control. You're able to take that feeling and manipulate it in whichever way is fruitful. You can dispose of it. You can ignore it. You can find a solution and counteract it. But if you are oblivious as to who you really are, what the things that trigger you, then you're at the mercy of anybody who, by accident or by intent, presses those buttons. So getting to know yourself, it's instrumental in not going through life in a reactionary mode. Here you take the reins and you're able to understand, oh, this is why I feel this way. My next step is blank. And now you're driving again.
Yeah, and I think going all the way back to what RJ said with, you know, when we talk about knowing thyself, it really, I don't think your typical average person or the majority of society does a great job of turning that inward eye, you know, and looking for the positive, right? Because that's not the state and the vibe that you see the world in, right? It's, you know, people just go after the flaws and constantly find the flaws in themselves and perseverate on those flaws. Instead of looking, you know, going back to what Juan said, you know, actually knowing and being cognizant that, hey, there's good stuff here and there's stuff I probably need to improve on. And picking and choosing the things that will make me a more comfortable person inside my skin. I don't think we do that. I know teenagers don't do that, right? You know, and those are struggles for them. People who aren't accustomed to turning that inward eye towards themselves. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, and I'm 43, you know, I'll probably spend the rest of my life trying to make that better. But it's a really hard thing, but it's a really hard thing to turn that inward eye and find that positive and work on that positive and improve on it. You know what I mean? It's, we're a very negative focused society. And I think it's a societal thing, more so than anything else. But, you know, again, going back to the 7th century BC, they struggled with the same things we did. They just didn't get bombarded. You know, they'd have to make a 4-day trek up a mountain and listen to some oracle girl who was sitting above a gas pocket and probably really high, to learn this wisdom, as opposed to us, you know, turning on our smartphones and getting that same hashtag, you know. So
that's why most Delphic maxims start with dude.
Indeed.
I was thinking, you know, maybe the modern day, or, you know, the modern day version of that would be like your talk therapist. You know, she's telling what you, they'll tell you what you need to know, I guess. What's so like, you can get through your life.
Well, so I think of like the Oracle. Is it that different though? Well, I think, you know, of like the Oracle in the Matrix, right? So, right. I mean, and this is clearly spelled out in the first Matrix movie, right? When he goes to see the Oracle for the first time in her kitchen, she has a sign above her door, her kitchen door, is what's it? Temet Noche? No, I got it wrong. I knew I screwed it up. It is
Temet Noske.
Right. So I had a close, which is the Latinized.
Tempus fugit.
Latinized version of know thyself, right? And so that's a good comparison to say if it was the modern day Oracle, it would be someone who can help you know yourself. And so I think it's important that we know ourselves first, because you know I believe change comes from within first, right? So you know if you want to be the change you wish to see in the world, you know, change comes from within. Like it starts with me. I have to look in the man in the mirror. All of these like phrases we hear all relate to that same. I have to figure out my stuff first before I start, you know, looking outward and trying to change the world. Right. Every time you point a finger, you have three fingers pointing back at you. And so I think all of these phrases are similar, but different in the sense that they're trying to tell you, like, if you really want to make a difference, like no kidding, make a difference. Start with one person, and that's you first. And by effect, you know, the world will change around you, right? This is, you know, what we say when you're trying to, influence, you know, large groups. If you're trying to be a leader, right, you can't fake it. You have to be a servant leader to really carry things forward. So that's why I think it's important to know thyself first before you go on any greater undertaking. Which actually leads to the next section, which is what does this have to do with Freemasonry, right? We've talked for 36 minutes about some very old words ascribed on some stone wall. What does this have to do with Freemasonry?
And in the Tyler's chair at the House of the Temple.
You beat me to it. I was literally going to say that. Yeah, it's carved in stone in that stone chair outside the lodge room of the House of the Temple. And it's a vacant seat, and it's imposing, right? Because, you know, you sit there, you look at that empty chair, and it's telling you to know thyself. And that's for Freemasons, at least for me as a Freemason. I take it as that introspective need that we have, right? That's part of the initiatic journey. And it's not easy. You know, all of us here have gone through the 3 degrees of craft masonry. But do you ever finish going through the degrees? You know, it's something that's you get once, but it gives you gifts for the rest of your life, you know, depending on, you know, if it was something that you internalized and ran with, or, you know, just something that took you somewhere else, you know, on a different part of the journey. But its intent is to be an introspective journey that you get to do with other like-minded people. You know, so for me, that's really what it means for me, is just to make it a journey of introspection more than anything else.
Well, you especially see that in the practice of the Chamber of Reflection. And so there are certain jurisdictions that do this. There are certain jurisdictions that are not a fan. But it is a very, very powerful tool that aids the initiatic experience. And where you have a candidate who goes into a room, and there are certain emblems and symbols there, but the purpose of that entire experience is introspection, self-reflection, to get oneself prepared to receive enlightenment. And I think that's something that we haven't necessarily touched on, is how knowing yourself and knowing your true form is crucial to being able to receive enlightenment and through an initiatic experience.
Yeah, I wanted to touch up on the initiatic experience, because this shines a light on the importance of the order and the time dedicated to it. Unfortunately, a lot of people rush through the degrees. They are rushing to become Master Masons. And I know in some jurisdictions, because they're not part of the meetings as entered apprentices, there is that sense of urgency that I'm not going to be part of a full meeting until I become a master. But think about this. When you are presented the working tools of an entered apprentice, they're pretty much centered on you. There are tools to help you as an individual get to recognize the superfluities in your life and remove them. So in essence, right. that entered Apprentice, you're working on yourself personally.
First,
yes. And then when you go to the Fellowcraft degree and you start exploring faith, hope, charity, and you're thinking about the liberal arts and sciences, a lot of these things depart from you, but they extend outward. So now you're starting to be of influence to the people outside of you. Especially when I think about the liberal arts and sciences, you're basically, it's your manual to connect with other people and to not be at the mercy of everyone. But we rush through the degrees. We don't have, especially the past 18 months showed you, like we have failed miserably in imbuing our brethren with logic and yes. rhetoric.
Yeah, totally agree.
Before sending them out to the world.
But you know, now we had the big break. So they're not going to really have a chance to know themselves, right? All they know about themselves is what they wrote on the petition. And now they're going to just go through a one-day class to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against a one-day class. No. I'm just saying it's not optimum. Well, it's convenient for some.
It reminds me of the joke of the guy who got initiated and then came back 50 years later for his Fellowcraft degree. And when they asked him, well, what took you 50 years? He goes, I think I finally circumscribed my passions.
Right.
It took him 50 years. And it's funny because, like, man, wouldn't that be cool if we actually did that, if we actually applied that? And even outside of Freemasonry, there are other mystery schools. I mean, if you follow rites of initiation, most of them have a purification phase before you get in, right? The preliminal phase is actually about, you know, being cut off. Like, fix yourself first before you can actually get transformed.
The best thing.
Right. And this is also part of the hero's journey, right? We use the monomyth of, you know, the hero leaves town, leaves comfort to go on this journey and has to experience the pain of, like, crap, I'm out of my comfort zone first before they can descend and become transformed. So, I mean, it's this parallel across all of these different transformation rituals, Freemasonry just being one of them.
Yeah, that proverb, don't forget, it's a beautiful proverb that applies here. It's check yourself before you wreck yourself. Chickity check yourself.
Also not wrong. So I think this is a really good point that how this applies to Freemasonry is, you know, if you're interested in joining Freemasonry, you know, this is the best way to experience it, is to start the transformation now. We take good men and make them better, and we do that if they actually start the change, if they start the change process themselves, which is what we were alluding to with kind of rushing things through. But you know,
it's a participatory system.
Mm-hmm. So then you're wrapping things up. Let's really talk about, you know, what does it mean for each of us now, like personally, or we've covered kind of how we interpreted it, but now as our final question, we're going to go around and look at how are you going to apply that, or how have you applied that, to your person, and what does that mean for you, and what other pieces of, you know, wisdom or advice do you want to give someone who's trying to figure out how to apply Know Thyself? And we will start with Mr. Richards.
I will start by shifting my camera back to center view. Ask me that question again, John.
How have you or are you applying the maxim of Know Thyself?
So I think in some ways I commit introspection way too much and go way too far with it. and you know, in some ways, you know, I tend to obsess over my failings. And that to me is not truly knowing oneself. I think that's almost distorting the knowledge of yourself by accentuating the bad.
Overanalyzing.
Yeah. Making things bigger than they are. And so, honestly balancing out my mental state and trying to look at everything in my life as objectively as possible is, mm-hmm. is one way that, I'm starting to work through that maxim of knowing yourself. Taking care of your mental health is, in support of that maxim. It's just spending some time quietly and reflecting. I've talked a little bit on the show a couple times in years past about the little ritual that I have that's very sacred to me. And that ritual is that, every year, Christmas Eve, I set aside time to for introspection and self-reflection on how I have grown over the past year since the previous Christmas Eve. And that is a way that I am able to enter into that sacred space once a year and really take a look at the good, the bad, how I've changed and how I need to change in the next year. And so those are the ways that I have adopted and am working toward fulfilling that maxim, which I mentioned this in the chat, but I do not think it's possible to actually truly know yourself in this life. I think you won't actually know yourself until you pass that threshold into whatever awaits us after we pass.
Wow, that's deep. I will say it's better to overanalyze than not to analyze at all, I guess, right? It's even though you may feel like you're overthinking it, but I'd rather someone be cautious than be a jerk. So, speaking of jerks, Joe Martinez, how do you apply?
How did I know that was my segue?
That was amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I know how I'm going to know yourself as soon as we hang up. So
pour some water on the burn.
So knowing thyself is one of my all-time favorite of the Delphic maxim, so much so that it now sits on my arm in Greek, nothiseuton. But I use it. I actually use
it. You literally wear it on your sleeve.
I do wear it on my sleeve, and I use it as a constant reminder that it's important to know ourselves for a lot of the reasons that Jason talked about. What Jason said was absolutely beautiful and just hit me right in the bones. But I think when we take that honest effort to know ourselves, as the maxim tells us, I think it's an act of love, right? That we care enough about ourselves to look at those faults and foibles and want to make a positive change. And also to look at the good things and how to promote that in our small circle or our bigger circles or our community-wide circles. I think it really is an act of love. So in the end, for me, I try to apply knowing thyself as how can I love myself and love those around me enough to take that hard look inside myself at every possible occasion in that quiet moment in my mind and see what I can do to improve myself. And I think that, doing that a little bit, every time that you can, you'll end up with that better state of being overall, or at least I hope. So that's me.
Awesome. Not as tricky as I thought. All right, over to you, Robert. How have you or are you applying Know Thyself?
With pills!
Well...
No. So, honesty, yeah. I mean, so for a long time in my life, right, I struggle with anxiety, depression. No secret, right? I've talked about that on Whence Came You and other times. And so my whole life has been like that. And my whole life, you go through and you try all of the things because, right, your mental health, something that Jason really touched on and I think is so important, in particular, because sometimes people don't always ascribe mental health to, they take all these really great natural approaches to things, meditation and journaling. And I do all those, right? And then with the maxim, like with a maxim, like know thyself, it gets really esoteric. And what we find is sometimes, a lot of the concepts and things that you're exposed to on your journey to know yourself, can become confusing or can cause, spiritual doubts or can cause doubts about yourself. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of pitfalls in your journey, which is why, it is a treacherous one to, undertake any sort of initiation. And knowing yourself is ultimately, a process that you go through over time. And as Jason also said, right, you never really truly know yourself. Just because we always don't have the capability to have the introspective nature to ask the hard questions of ourselves. We always have some sort of a cognitive block, I think, which requires perhaps, our better halves, right? Our significant others who maybe we bounce things off of, or maybe you have a therapist, or maybe you talk to your teacher or counselor or whatever. Or your mentors in Lodge, people who help you along the way to see not your faults, right? But where you, have your own personal difficulties, but it also comes with being comfortable and trustworthy of your brothers, right? That's why we have a Masonic lodge full of brothers who are there to help you and to care for you also, to really care. And, you know, when I started this, I wasn't joking. Like, I wasn't making a joke on anybody who takes medication, right? Like I recently had to start taking medication myself. And I was really bummed out about it. And so I just say that, you know, to know yourself, have good mental health, and to take care of your mind, your body, and your spirit, all three of them. And as my wife reminded me, because my friend Allison reminded me also, if you can't make your own, store-bought is fine. I guess there's some like cook that says that, and whatever. So for those people out there who are on this journey of know thyself, like, and thinking about it in terms of mental health and all of the esoterics that comes along with that. I mean, if you don't think that they're connected, just read Jung or even Freud. But, I mean, really, it is a treacherous journey. You remember the meme? I think we all laughed at it, right? It was the one that it said, what people think a spiritual awakening is like, what it's really like. And there's like this guy, he's like naked shivering in the corner, like, oh my God. But I mean, this is moments of real revelation that aren't always pleasant. And I think, be prepared for those things when you know yourself. So journaling and, you know, just being honest with yourself. It's hard, but do it.
It is very true. Juan Sepulveda.
I love hearing this. Thank you so much for your vulnerability, RJ. I mean, it's important that people hear that, especially from people we admire, because there a lot of these things carry stigmas. And I think I mentioned it last on the last episode that if you struggle with mental health, a lot of people see it as a weakness. They see it as, oh, you're being a crybaby, or just like man up or whatever. But it has nothing to do with your strength. It has nothing to do with your virility. It has nothing to do with any of that. Like, mental health is something that we all are vulnerable to. And I appreciate your openness when it comes to talking about it. But one thing I wanted to emphasize for people listening, the maxim, know thyself, doesn't imply that this discovery happens on your own. So you can get to know yourself, like truly get to know yourself, by connecting with someone that can help you make that discovery. There's no shame in that. If you need to speak with a professional, do you need to speak with a friend or even a stranger? Do you need to speak with someone who can help you really be productive in that search for who your true self is. And I encourage anybody who try to, if you don't have someone in your life, especially now that so many people have been separated because of the pandemic, they've been at arm's length for a long time. A lot of people are suffering for not having that physical contact, that proximity with other people. So take the time to know yourself in your own introspection, and you can do so by getting assistance from people that surround you. To answer John's question about what I've been doing, like my whole life has been defined by that exploration. Mm-hmm. The beginning of me putting together the winding stairs even is an example of me searching for, okay, what is it that I have to improve upon? And let's go on this journey together. So I do appreciate that effort. And for me, I have ebbs and flows. There are moments in which I am hitting on all cylinders and I feel like I am dominating all the weak areas of my person. I'm dominating all the things that I was vulnerable to. And there are moments where I am at the mercy of all those flaws. And the same could be true for you. So don't beat yourself up. Don't attribute or don't equate your value to your current inefficiency or inability to deal with your current situation. It has no bearing on who you are and the value that you offer. So thank you so much for everyone who follows the Masonic Roundtable. We appreciate your support. Thank you so much for participating. There's going to be a lot. There have been a lot of people in the YouTube chat putting their comments, their opinion. So if you've never done that, join us in 15 minutes or next Thursday at 9:30. This will continue happening. And lastly, if you want to be able to measure yourself, measure twice and cut once, I have some very specific teachings about that, the practical side of Masonry. Go to appliedfreemasonry.com and you'll see some answers there. Thank you, brothers.
Awesome. Then as for me, the way that I do that, in case you haven't figured out, I'm a very analytical person. I like to, you know, look at data and try to deconstruct that. And I found that to be true. Even before I was a Mason, one of my like absolute favorite websites, it's kind of gone gauche now, but, was lifehacker.com, where life hacks were the thing where you would, oh man, if I could find a way to speed up my email, if I could find a way to run a little bit faster, if I could just tweak what I'm doing to get a better result. I was always like I was obsessed with finding all these new tips and tricks. Some were software, some were, you know, exercise related, some were, emotional intelligence. How do you deal with the world? And so I just became obsessed with life hacking in general. And the goal of life hacking is not to be better than others. It's to be better than yourself. It's to be better than who you were yesterday. In fact, one of my new obsessions, this is really cool, is there's this theory or a gimmick that helps people think through how are they improving themselves. It's a little bit different than know thyself, but how to improve yourself. In the military, there's a way of a concept of called killing your clone. And what does killing your clone mean? Well, it means that imagine that every day an exact copy of you has been cloned. It has all your memories. It has all your physical attributes. And it's exactly you. But at midnight tonight, you have to fight that clone and win. And so you get to pick the battle. It can be spiritual. It can be physical. It can be mental. And what are you going to decide to do every morning when you wake up to kill your clone? To be better than that clone that was at midnight the night before. And so it's a neat little mental mnemonic that helps you carry this process of where am I? Where's my baseline? And how am I going to get a little bit better? How am I going to get a little bit further across the finish line than I was yesterday? And so that can be for, again, your physical abilities, exercise, sports. It can be for, religious things. Am I reading a little bit more of my sacred text? Am I praying a little bit more? or even in my vocation, right? I'm a big fan of agile development, and retrospectives are important. Stop and reflect, because again, if you don't know where you are, then you won't know where you want to be. That's it for tonight's show. Stay tuned. Go back to the YouTube channel. Click on the new video for the found symbol, right? Our version of an episode by episode breakdown of the lost symbol. Every Thursday night, as long as they will air the mini series on Peacock of the lost symbol.
Spoilers will happen.
Full of spoilers. If you haven't watched it, now's your chance, but you probably won't get it all done in 15 minutes. So hope to see you all over there. If not, let's go for this this crazy journey. I want to thank you all very much for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.